Good morning, Zeke.
Howdy. How you doing?
Doing very good, and you?
Not bad, not bad. It was a rough night, but it looks to be like, even despite the rain, a wonderful morning. And yeah, no, today we have, everything is changing. You're playing Tori Amos, and I don't know, I'm doing a pre-recorded thing. This is like all fancy and slicked up. It's got edits, it's got cuts. Basically, the three of us, Sabrina, Liz, and myself, took part in a group interview with the wonderful, wonderful artist, Earl Bronstein. Bronstein spelt with two E's, and if you want to go check out his stuff, it's earlbronstein.com, and that again is with two E's, and he has this book called Contemporary Art Appreciation 101, or How to Tell What's Contemporary and What's Snot. Everything you always wanted to ask about contemporary art but were afraid to know. And it is, yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful bit of, art, fun stuff, cool, interesting, and so on and so forth. And at which point, if you hit the play button, then we can try and maybe explain to these people why. A discussion with somebody who's going to be both entertaining and informative, and it's just he's a nice guy, and that's why I sort of wanted to do it, and I really, really like his work as well. So how are you doing down there?
We're doing fine. The weather is terrific. I played tennis this morning.
Lesson 11, guest lecturer series.
How did you get into art? Because I just came across your first book by happen chance.
And I remember that.
And sort of fell in love, and then at which point it was just off to the races.
Well, it really was by mistake. I never had an interest in art in all my life. I never went to museums when I was young. I didn't have any interest in it. I got in through the back door via photography when I was 13. I got a camera for my bar mitzvah, and I started taking pictures, and I really enjoyed doing that, and I did that for several years. I remember I used to sell prints for 25 cents a piece and got enough money to buy a fancy new Speed Graphics, which I used in college. Then the war came along, and that was the end of that until the 1960s.
Okay.
When I was in the 40s, and I got fired from my job and decided to go back to photography, took some courses and started with photography, and that's how I eventually got into art and installations.
Lesson 3, photography, staged photographs.
What was it about the photography that turned your crank, got you interested?
I have absolutely no idea. I just enjoyed doing it. I set up a dark room in the bathroom of my home and used to print black and white pictures. I enjoyed, all I was doing then at the beginning was taking candid photos of individuals.
Okay.
When I, later on, I started doing in my career down here and in New York City, I started expanding to try to do travel photography, geographic type, and I enjoyed that. And we did a lot of traveling and took a lot of pictures.
Lesson 16, miscellaneous or extraneous.
Do you have any plans to exhibit them, show them, put them up on the internet or anything like that?
No, I never was good enough. They were above the level of an amateur, but not quite good enough to be published. And when I started my art career down here when we moved to Florida, I used that to start making large scale combination photographs with 40 pictures in each one depicting a theme. I would go to the circus, take about 40 of the prints, assemble them together, and then started adding to them non-photographic work, and that's what got me into installation art.
Lesson 6, Understanding Conceptual Art.
That switch into sort of more conceptual installation stuff. Was that
right?
Was that a sort of natural outgrowth of just making the sort of the combination photos, or was there sort of like some light bulb that went off in your head?
It's a light bulb. That's always been my thing. Usually in the middle of the night, I'll wake up with an idea and write on the pad next to me and hope that I can read it in the morning, and sometimes I can. And it just happened that way, that I took ordinary photographs, which I had assembled, and added to them pieces that were not photographic, and then eventually dropped all photographs and just started doing installation art or conceptual art.
Lesson 4.5, Words as Art.
Did that lead naturally into the books, or...?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea how I started. Just another light bulb, as you put it. My first book was the one that somehow you got a hold of. I always felt that there were many parts of contemporary art that I thought were a sham, and I wrote this book, 100 Ways to Become a Famous Artist, and that was the basis for that book, and I was so successful with that book that I started the second book, which is the one I've spent most of my time on, which is the book Contemporary Art Appreciation 101.
Yes, no, that's a phenomenal book.
I've actually sold 32 copies of that already in 2.5 years.
Rule 114. Nothing succeeds like excess.
It's Liz speaking now, and it kind of looks like it can become a course in one of those schools that you can take, of course, especially within that book that you just released recently. Especially with your first book, though, to go back to that one, I was reading a bit of it online, because you do have a website where you can actually access a few pages of that book, if not all of it. Am I correct?
The first book I put online on my website, earlbunstein.com, and I have the whole book on there, the 100 Rules How to Become a Famous Artist. I put that on the website where you could download it free or you could buy it. And a lot of people have gone to that website. Not many of them have bought it, but a lot of people have. And it's really just a tongue-in-cheek spoof of contemporary art.
Lesson 7, Understanding Processes in Art.
I noticed that it's a spoof, but then it's also reality, though, because you are referring towards the art world and critiquing that art world, but in a way that is productive and proactive, in a sense that you're using your own art to demonstrate your point, which is something I think not many artists feel that they can do, especially challenging the norms or what are the definitions of the art world and how that art world is constructed. Some artists fear doing that. Some other artists actually do challenge it and end up becoming successful, is what you learn in your book and, I guess, upon your own observations or experiences. So I'm just wondering, based on one of the rules that you had, which is rule number 3, which was to better copy other people's art rather than solely criticizing it, I'm wondering if you ever did copy other artists' work, and what were their reactions if they ever saw your art about it?
Well, I guess someone once said there is nothing that's original in art, and that everyone's art is really based upon layers of what they've been exposed to. But I didn't knowingly copy anybody else's specific piece. But in the art world, it's done all the time, not with malice aforethought. This is an outgrowth or a development in your stage, I think. So I don't think there's anything pernicious or evil about it. We're all influenced by what we see around us and other artists' work, and it's natural to be influenced and to mimic or copy that work.
Rule 88. If they understand your work, you're dead in the water.
And what is a meaningful piece, then, for your own art? Like, what do you consider?
I think the rejection wall. I think my rejection wall is the most meaningful piece that I have, which is the one that's been exhibited in 3 or 4 museums and was in O.K. Harris, and it consists of some 400-some-odd rejection letters that I received from art museums and collectors all over the country, which I then took and framed in diploma-like frames, and assembled on a 50-foot wall, and added to it my own comments very often about the state of the art world, the state of my world, the state of everyone's world. And that piece, I think, rang true to so many people who have faced rejection all their lives, and I was able to take rejection and turn it around and make it into success. So that was my most meaningful piece in that direction. But I never was able to sell it, so I'm still rejected.
Rule 9, how to make process work for you.
It's like this book I'm working on now, the second edition. I don't know if you've seen that, which is 304 pages, and I keep adding to it all the time, and I just love doing it. There isn't an audience of more than 100 people in the United States for it, because it's cost $250-some-odd. It takes me over a day to assemble after I've had it printed and everything, and I'm never going to make any money on it. I just love doing it, and I think that's the way most artists feel, whether they're successful or not successful. We'd rather rake in the millions that the Englishmen are able to do, but we're just happy going to work in the morning to be able to do what we're doing.
Rule 28, hone your craft.
When I had my studio down here where I assembled these installations, and I had 8,000 square feet of warehouse space because my pieces were so big, and I needed all the space because I never sold any, so I just had to keep getting more space. I remember when I would finish a piece and stand back and look at it, and I would applaud. It just made me so happy to have looked at what I had created that it gave me a thrill.
Rule 49. You can string any museum along.
What other reaction have you had from people than us?
I have my rejection letters showing that to my artwork, I had 400 some odd different museums or collectors say they don't want to exhibit my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I would send out my portfolio and the mail would come back and I'd open the box and they would read my portfolio with a rejection letter and how sad I really felt about it. And that's that was happening time and time again. There were very few, maybe four museums in all the 10, 15 years that I was trying to get shown that did show my work.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean they didn't like my work, but it very likely they didn't want to show it.
Yes. No.
And it was there they always responded with my book. It's been much worse. I don't understand it. I've been sending my book to a limited number of university museums.
Mm-hmm.
And the book, now sells for $225, and the new edition is going to be more expensive. And I've sold it to about 30, 35, which is an amazing number, percentage of the total. But I've gotten back, I would say, 40 or 50 of the books returned to me, 90% of which are returned in the same box as they were sent properly, but they don't have a cover letter, they don't have a note, and they even send back the letter that I sent to them. And I find that it really hurts me when that happens. And I don't know if they're sending it back because they don't like the book, or they don't have the money to buy the book in these particular times, or whatever the reason, but it is so hurtful when I get a box back without even a note saying, thanks for sending, or here's your book back.
Rule 78. Performance art is alive and well.
I've been accepted in some of the most prestigious collections, the Jaffe collection here, and the one in Miami, and the universities, all the university libraries in California, and many of the major university libraries. So it's quantity-wise, for an individual book, I think I've done as well as almost, any artist book maker.
Lesson 9, Understanding Process in Art.
The book that I sent you is now, I'm just making into a loose-leaf binder, and it gives me the flexibility of adding a lot of pages and adding embellishments to it, and I think it's quite an update. And I'm hoping that once the economic downturn abates here in the United States, which may take another year, that maybe some of these museums who turn the book down without even sending me back a letter may then be interested in buying it, and I have distributed the Vamp and Tramp, who is the leading artist book distributor, and that they will approach them again in a year or two, and maybe some of them will buy.
There isn't a
bright future ahead, because just the total number of potential purchases of this book is small, but I enjoy just putting them together.
Real tricky. How many poles do you need to spread water on gallery floor?
This is Sabrina here. I wanted to actually ask you a question. I wanted to say I really enjoy how you infuse humor into your work, which is sort of a breath of fresh air, because a lot of people have that feeling, that mentality, that the art world is very cold and calculated, sort of self-absorbed. But I wanted to know, how important do you feel that humor is in relation to your work?
How important my what is?
Humor, like your sense of humor in relation to your work.
I'd say about 110%.
That's
really
actually great to hear.
I enjoy humor. I think I do it more in my book than in my art. My art was not really didn't have the wasn't the venue for it. But I think one of the reasons I enjoy writing is because I enjoy being able to inject the satire into it, and I when I wake up in the morning and I look at my scribbles and figure them out and try to adapt some of them to my work, it's the humor in it that is the most important part to me in my book working. In my art, that was not true, but in my book writing and creating, it is true.
Rule 72A, death doesn't sell.
Cool. At which point, is there anything that you would like any one of us to ask you that we haven't asked yet?
Well, what I would have liked is, you said that you were going to send me the questions in advance, and that would have made it a lot easier. It would have made the answers a lot better.
That is my mistake. I completely forgot. I completely spaced. My apologies to you. It is the sort of thing where I think I've had two written questions down, which is, one of them is, what's next? And then,
that's a good question. That's the one I wouldn't have wanted you to ask.
So I won't ask that.
And I didn't want to interrupt. I just had.
I don't know what's next. That's my problem. What happened is I enjoyed the book, and I started doing a third book, and I got maybe halfway through it back in the fall of last year. And then my lymphoma came back, and I had to go into the hospital for six-day stints of 24-hour chemo. And it knocked the hell out of me for a while. I did that twice, supposed to do it six times, and I finally couldn't take it anymore, and they put me on another treatment, and fortunately I'm in remission again. But that really set me back tremendously, and I stopped writing the book, and have not continued writing the book. And my wife looks at me and says, well, what are you going to do? What's next? And I really don't know. And I've just spent the time, instead of some new venture or continuing the other, I've spent it in upgrading my book, Contemporary Art Appreciation 101, which takes me from 6 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, doing over all these books, converting them to loose leaf, and really improving them. I don't know whether I'm hiding and doing that or what, but I know I'm not going to go back into the creation of art. I can't write a novel. I don't have the ability to do that kind of writing. I need my humor to feed off something else, and I'm not able to do it myself. I need to... what do you call it when you have two comedians? One is this
the straight man, and the other one is the straight man.
Right. I need a straight man, and the straight man in my work so far has been contemporary art, and that's my straight man, and I can feed off that. And I thought I had one in my other book, and I thought it was a good book, but I just didn't want to pursue it, and I really don't know what comes next. I'm 83 years old, mm-hmm. and I'm in good health, and I play a lot of tennis, and I'm active, and I don't know when I finish the next assembling the next 20 books converted them, what I'm going to do.
Lesson 4, the Asian influence.
Besides myself up here in Montreal and now Liz and Sabrina, are there any other copies of your book up here? Or are there any possibilities?
You have the only copy in Canada. I haven't. It's very expensive to send books to Canada. And whereas there are several universities and they collect artist books, and I've never gone after the Canadian market just because it's so expensive sending the books. You have to send postage up and postage back. So I've never gone after them. But you were good enough to send me a long time ago a list of various institutions that are interested in artist books, and most of them at that time that you sent me naturally were in Canada, but I've never approached a single one. So maybe that's if I could figure out a way that it wouldn't be so expensive, I'm sure I can get a lot more rejections from up there if I add to my collection.
Well, there, if you come up to visit, to mail from here, it's way cheaper than it is to mail from down there.
That's true.
But it's a long walk to get to Canada from here.
You can make that a walk, an artistic walk run, maybe. An art walk, you never know.
I have never been to Montreal, unfortunately. I went to Toronto with my wife on a vacation and loved the experience, and they had a wonderful art museum there, Contemporary Art Museum, and I've never been to Montreal, and we've always wanted to go, and maybe when I run out of pigeons here to try to sell my book, I'll put a few in a carpet bag and go up to Canada and see if we can sell a couple.
You'd be most welcome at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Rule 62. Hire a PR firm.
Is there anything else you'd like us to ask you?
Talking about serendipity, as we weren't, I got the idea of adding these embellishments to it. The original book that I had, the 100 Rules, was just a book without anything on the pages. And for some reason, the light bulb went off while I was waiting to straighten out my problems with Contemporary Art 101. And I got the idea of adding these embellishments to the pages, which is what has made this book, you know, a meaningful book. No other book has been written quite like that. And so that here, something that really was going to be a disaster, fortunately, and turned out to be a great success, because of the fact that for some reason the idea hit me that I would take these pages and add to them, write on them, add pictures to them, add the sniff and scratch, smell things on each page to make it even more appealing. And if you had asked me that question, I would have answered it as such.
Next time, I promise you I will ask that question.
All right.
Thank you very, very much, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the weekend.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Howdy. Yeah. There, if you'd like more information about Earl Bronstein, it's Earl Bronstein, E-A-R-L, Bronstein with two E's, Bronstenen.com, and his book is Contemporary Art Appreciation 101. And now we got to go to Democracy Now! Headlines.